It's Texas Standard Time.
Any weekend plans? Too soon for a dip in the river? The Blanco is only 87 miles long, winding from the tiny central Texas community of Lindendale near Fredericksburg to the city and river of San Marcos along I-35. Though small in terms of literal length, the Blanco can also be measured by what it represents, a geological dividing line between East and West Texas, the coastal prairie and the Edwards Plateau. It has a remarkable past, too, named by Spanish explorers for its white limestone. The Blanco flows to the future, running through one of the fastest-growing regions in the nation. And it's often a battleground between public access to Texas waterways and private land ownership. And then 2 years ago, on Memorial Day weekend, the Blanco swelled to massive proportions, leaving death and destruction in its wake. Wes Ferguson goes deep into all this and more in his new book, The Blanco River.
I looked at the Blanco again, trying to picture this massive quantity of water as it disappeared into the earth. How could that happen to such a healthy-looking stream? It occurred to me that I knew very little about this river. As the horses clopped alongside the bank, my curiosity grew. Through my work on the Sabine, I believed I had mastered the well-traveled narrative formula. I would find a kayak, paddle the Blanco for 2 or 3 weeks, camp on sandbars, maybe do a little fishing. It seemed like a fun and easy project. Back home after the trail ride, I called my friend and frequent collaborator Jacob Croft Botter, a fine art photographer and outdoorsman. He immediately agreed to join me for a grand float down the Blanco. Then I called a few other people. That's when our plans hit a snag.
Well, that talk about a cliffhanger. Plans hit a snag. What happened?
I started talking to people who actually owned land along the Blanco, and they informed me that the Blanco was a privately owned river. It was an exception to state navigation law, and that I would need permission to travel the river.
Is that true? Is privately owned river?
Well, in a sense, the riverbank below the water is privately owned, and these people, in some cases, paid a lot of money for that, and they pay taxes on it, which is quite different than a lot of our larger rivers like the Colorado. But the Supreme Court of Texas has determined that the public still has a right to navigate those rivers, whether they are flowing or dry, as long as the width is an average of 30 feet or wider.
So does this mean that that if you want to see the Blanco, travel it from one end to the other, you can travel it if you can find a way to get there?
Right. I mean, it is a place for people to come and play, but it's thought of as more of an exclusive river where if you know someone or if you own the land, then you have access to that. And if you don't, then it's pretty challenging to get to the best and most beautiful places.
You actually get into the water quite a bit in this book. Well, you tried to make your way up through a place called the Narrows. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the Narrows is one of the most beautiful swimming holes in Texas, but it's pretty small, and it's kind of like a cave that where the bottom has fallen out of the river, and you go through these like really narrow channels with ferns hanging down from all sides and little droplets of water falling into these really deep pools, some of which go down 20 feet or more.
That's incredible. What's special about the Narrows? I mean, other than obviously the beauty.
Well, it starts with the beauty, but then the fact that it's so hard to get to and so very well protected by the owners that anybody who wants to explore and, you know, see this like forbidden object is going to be inclined to try to get there themselves. But the only way for the public to access it is to walk, swim, or during times of high flow, paddle the river about 10 miles each way downstream and then back up. And you have to stay within the river banks or else you're trespassing. It's kind of local custom that people should stay out of these, you know, somewhat inaccessible areas.
Private ownership, though, is often characterized as something that is bad for the river. You can look back in history, though, and make the case that maybe private ownership in some ways has preserved important parts of this river, right?
Yeah, I think that if the public was on this river in large numbers, if there were hordes of people tubing down the river, then you would see a lot more trash. The river would be degraded as it is on the Comal and in some cases in the San Marcos, where it takes these huge teams of volunteers and city employees to go clean up the river at the end of each like tubing season. And so because the Blanco is somewhat inaccessible to the public and because it is under private stewardship, it probably is a little cleaner than it would have been.
Is the Blanco, how is the Blanco endangered? I mean, if there are areas where the public has a tough time accessing it, one would think, hey, this is a good thing for the river. Perhaps it will survive some of the ecological damage that has been wrought upon some of the other waterways in Texas.
Right. The biggest threat to the river now is a combination of climate change, which has led to prolonged droughts and seen the river's flow plummet at times. And also, because there's so much development, there's really a taxing demand for water throughout the Blanco River watershed. And, you know, everybody wants to water their grass and take showers. And that has depleted the aquifers that fuel the Blanco.
The Memorial Day floods make up a large portion of this book, almost a third of the book. And a testament to the unpredictability of the river and the power that it contains. You tell in the book stories of some of the survivors. Can you share maybe one or two that are particularly memorable to you?
Sure. And I actually, I finished the book a couple months before the floods and turned in the manuscript and thought I was done with the project. And then the Memorial Day 2015 floods happened and I had to ask for my editor to send the manuscript back. I interviewed lots of flood survivors. There was one guy in particular named Jeff who he was like wearing flip-flops. He'd just gotten back from a long day and was hanging out at the river and saw it coming up and, you know, moved his lawn furniture up, you know, a few feet and thought he was good. Next thing he knows, the lawn chairs are all floating by. And then next thing he knows, it's around his house and it's coming and he's at his truck trying to get away, but even the truck is getting stuck in all the floodwaters. So he took off in his flip-flops, jumping barbed wire fences through pastures, lost the flip-flops and spent the night running through fields and jumping barbed wire fences, trying to get to higher ground. And he said that, he would see a flash of lightning and notice that where there was a lighter spot on the field meant that was higher ground. So he would run to that lighter spot and then there'd be another flash of lightning and then he'd run to another one and kind of hopscotch from one spot of higher ground to another and was out there for several hours and people thought he was dead.
What are these stories, will you put them together, tell you about the Blanco River or maybe about Texas in a larger sense?
I think most of the time the Blanco is, you know, it's a very relaxing place to be. It's for a lot of people, you know, it's part of their backyard. It's a nice place to, you know, drink coffee in the morning and see the beautiful green water flowing past. But there's a real harm in forgetting that it's a wild place and it flouts human dominion. And you have to be prepared for what may.
As rivers go, it's rather short, but its story long and winding, and like the river threatened with extinction. Good news for the story, it's been saved, compellingly told in The Blanco River by Wes Ferguson with photographs by Jacob Botter. Wes, congratulations, and thanks for speaking with the Texas Standard.
Thanks for having me.